in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. I'm Chris Berube. The automatic sequester cuts have begun to take effect this week after politicians in Washington failed to reach a deal last Friday. It seems like the cuts are hitting Illinois especially hard. Among other things, the state is set to lose $38 million in funding for medical research and $24 million for special education. Up to 14,000 military jobs might get furloughed, and the list goes on. Joining us now to discuss the sequester cuts is Marilyn Giewax. She is a senior business editor at NPR in Washington. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi.
So, are we being paranoid in Illinois, or are we being hit particularly hard?
No, the statistics show that Illinois will be one of the states that gets a pretty heavy hit from this. Part of that is because of O'Hare. You have a lot of interest in what happens with the FAA. But also, there are just a lot of civilian defense jobs that are there, about 14,000, where people will be asked to take one day a week off for the next 7 months. So basically, that's a 20% pay cut for something like 14,000 people. But there's also just all kinds of trims in there that are tough for Illinois. You've got, even though it doesn't sound like a huge amount, you know, it's almost $600,000 that goes towards law enforcement that, you know, not something that you want to have less of, I suppose. And 2,700 children in Illinois go to the Head Start programs that get some of this federal funding that will be trimmed. You know, they're not big enough to probably derail the economy, but they are big enough to hurt.
A study came out last week showing that Illinois could be sort of among the top five in terms of states hit by the sequester. Why Illinois specifically? Are we just so reliant on federal funding that that's why this has become an issue?
So you have the disadvantage of having a lot of smart people. You know, you have civilian contractors who are doing work for the Defense Department, and that's why it sort of jumps out. If you live in a state that is primarily agricultural and there's not much research going on, then you're not going to be hit as much, and especially things like medical research, too. Public health will be one of the things that's going to be hit by this. And the FAA, of course, there's also going to be furloughs with air traffic controllers, and Illinois is sort of disproportionately influenced by the Federal Aviation Administration. The FAA has a lot of air traffic controllers who would like to get a full paycheck, and in coming months, they may very well be on these 20% pay cuts, the furloughs, as well as cutbacks on overtime. And we're starting to see that already with the TSA. The security folks at the airports are not getting overtime, and they too are going to probably lose some positions. There are jobs that won't be filled. Jobs that could be created in Illinois won't be for TSA workers because those will be vacancies. So, you know, they're really, when you add it all up, your position in aviation and defense is really why Illinois will be disproportionately hit.
Now, of course, aviation is not an industry entirely funded by the government, but a lot of educational institutions rely kind of disproportionately on federal funding. We've been hearing a lot about how institutions such as the University of Illinois, where we're based, are going to be hit. Why is it so disproportionate that education seems to be taking a hit on this?
Well, that has to do a lot with the grants that pass through. The National Institutes for Health, they give out grants to researchers for all sorts of health-related research. And again, you've got all kinds of smart people in your neighborhood, and those people depend on federal grants. They're not going to be able to make those kinds of plans. You don't really know if you can go ahead with your research because if you're one of the institutions that is about to lose its grant, maybe you can't hire the graduate students you had hoped for. You can't set up the experiments you were looking forward to. So it starts to have this corrosive effect where, you know, the postdocs will say, maybe I should take a look at a school in Canada or, you know, whatever, just to keep their funding going because they don't want to be in a program whose future is questionable or being cut back. So it's hurting a lot of universities, and a lot of research is being disrupted, or at least even if the effects haven't been felt yet, you may have your grant that finishes out this year. But of course, when you're doing research, you need to be able to think in terms of multi-years. Can you go forward?
Now, there's been some talk about steps forward since the sequester cuts have begun to take effect. There was some discussion today that the GOP has been considering figuring out a way to kind of keep the cuts at roughly the same level of the sequester, but to distribute them differently, meaning that more of the money would go back to the Pentagon. Would a plan like that have some kind of a positive impact on the economy, or does it have the potential to undo some of the damage?
Now, see, this is where you folks in the Midwest are starting to think about March Madness, and you're thinking basketball. But I live here in Washington, where March Madness is just getting underway. On Friday, March 1st, we had sequestration process began with these automatic funding cuts, and now here we are moving towards middle of March, and we've got on March 27th, we face another cliff. This is almost hard to explain to sane people because you have to get into Washington think to understand this. But the government runs on a fiscal year that begins on October 1st. So fiscal year 2013 is already pretty far down the road. And on March 27th, there's the money that has already been budgeted for this year, it expires because Congress never came up with a real budget for 2013. They just weren't able to agree on anything, so they did something that they call a continuing resolution. They took the 2012 budget and just continued it. They used this phrase, a CR, a continuing resolution. And the CR was for only 6 months. So you get to the end of March, and the continuing resolution that continued the budget from last year will expire. So Congress needs to take action to fund the back half of the fiscal year. And that happens on March 27th. So it's another one of these things that people have come to refer to as fiscal cliffs, where we sort of come up to a yet another unbelievable deadline and somebody's got to do something. So they're trying to find ways to maybe come up with some compromises where they take the roughest edges off of the sequestration, that is, put some more money back in, rearrange things to be not quite so hard on defense, and to come up with another continuing resolution to let us limp through the back half of fiscal 2013. Now, amid all of that process, Congress is actually supposed to be putting together the 2014 budget. They need to be actually thinking about what will happen next year. So all of this is kind of getting rolled up into one big giant ball where maybe they will figure out if they can kind of start to move towards how are we going to get out of all of these messes.
I mean, do you think a government shutdown is a possibility? I mean, the Republicans have been saying that it seems not to their advantage to have a government shutdown happen based on their experience with what happened under the Newt Gingrich Congress and the Clinton White House. Do you see that as a possibility?
Yes. For younger folks, you may not remember this, but back in 1995 and 96, during the Clinton years, similar situation set itself up, and Congress said, we're going to let the government shut down. They did not pass a continuing resolution. Things that were considered vital continued. I mean, some military spending and things that were considered emergency spending continued. But a lot of the government shut down, the national parks and all sorts of services that people really relied on. And it became very visible, and people were angry. They didn't like it, and it did not play out well politically for Republicans. So that lesson is still pretty well learned, and they're very reluctant to have this kind of broad-based government shutdown. There's not really an appetite for it on the part of Democrats or Republicans right now. So that's why there's some reason to believe that they will be able to put together something. Now, let me just point out that our friends in Congress always want to take advantage of vacation opportunities. They just returned last week after being off for President's Day, so they took that whole week off. But now they're getting ready for the big Easter break. So even though the deadline for this is March 27th, because of their desire to leave town on yet another break, they really need to wrap this up by March 22nd. So all of this could actually come together fairly quickly in the next week or so to try to get this continuing resolution passed and try to tame a little bit some of the harshest impact of sequestration.
Marilyn G. Wax, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Marilyn G. Wax is a senior business editor at NPR. You can hear her discuss the economy regularly on Talk of the Nation and other NPR programs. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 5th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of Lady Gregory, born Isabella Augusta Paris on this day in 1852 in County Tipperary, Ireland, an early patron of William Butler Yeats and his most loyal friend, along with him one of the founders of the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. She owned the estate in Cool in County Galway in Western Ireland, where Yeats wrote a number of his poems, including The Wild Swans at Cool, which begins, "The trees are in their autumn beauty, the woodland paths are dry. Under the October twilight, the water mirrors a still sky. Upon the brimming water, among the stones, are 59 swans." It was on this day in 1975 that the Home Brew Computer Club first met in a garage near Menlo Park in Silicon Valley. 1975, computers were not for personal use. They were gigantic, could take up an entire room, could cost about $1 million apiece. Among the early members of the Home Brew Computer Club were high school friends Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, who designed the Apple I and the Apple II to bring down to the Homebrew Computer Club and show it off. It's the birthday of the novelist Leslie Marmon Silco, born Albuquerque, 1948, grew up in the Laguna Pueblo Reservation, went to law school, but she quit after she read Charles Dickens's Bleak House. She said, "The law has nothing to do with justice, and injustice can't be left unchallenged. So I decided to be a writer. Writing can't change the world overnight, but writing may have an enormous effect over time, over the long haul." Best known for her novel Ceremony, the story of a Laguna man named Tayo who comes home to the reservation after surviving World War II and the Bataan Death March. Here's a poem by Carl Dennis entitled String Quartet. "Art and life, I wouldn't want to confuse them, but it's hard to hear this quartet without comparing it to a conversation of the quiet kind, where no one tries to outtalk the other participants, where each is eager